is good, everyone, and welcome back to the Nostalgia for Soldier podcast. My name is Taylor, aka Nostalgia. Joining me is Astil Vizel. What's good, my guy?
Okay, this is bad timing, but Emily just texted me. They just announced a remake for Persona 4, which is super hype.
It's awesome.
I just found that out like right now as we started recording.
In real time.
Yes, actually, and I'm really hype, but also I'm doing good. Someone else isn't doing good though.
Oh yeah, no. I also joining me and currently going through an emotional breakdown is Kay likes everything.
Oh my god.
How are you doing today?
I not good. I'm never watching the movie beforehand again. I have tissues with me now, ready, because I haven't stopped crying for 30 minutes.
Wow.
This yeah, is why so, I need like a day to recuperate.
Yeah, we okay, good, as good a time as any. I will introduce the topic. So welcome to part 6 of Miyazaki Magic. Today we are talking about The Wind Rises.
Yeah.
And funny enough, all three of us watched the movie this morning. Like, we were literally rolling into recording as we were just finishing watching the movie. Which is, I guess, for Kayla's not a good idea. Because she is currently crying.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say it off top before I even get into any kind of initial thoughts at all. I gave this movie a 5 out of 5.
Yeah.
Zoe also gave the movie a 5 out of 5. Kayla is a 3 in a row. Yeah. 15 for 15. Yeah. I'll go second. I'll let Kayla start to like recuperate her herself a little bit. I'll start with you. Initial, like, just since we just finished it, just initial thoughts on like how you liked the movie.
So I said it in the group chat and you didn't know. This was supposed to be his swan song. This was supposed to be Miyazaki's last movie until he decided to come out of retirement and do The Boy and the Heron. And if this was his last movie, what a fucking way to go out. Holy shit, this movie is beautiful. And yeah, Studio Ghibli, beautiful visually, but like the story is fucking beautiful. And for Miyazaki, it's really interesting because I think this is his best movie now from everything that I've seen. His best movie is the one that's most grounded in reality. His best movie is about a real guy that really lived in real life.
Yeah. That's super cool.
Like
how they did that.
It's a biopic, kind of, right? Because
kind of
there are mystical elements here and there, but that is, you know, I think Miyazaki's most straightforward way of saying like the world we live in can be magical as well, you know. So good, so poignant, and so also heartbreaking, because the whole movie is about like having pride in what you do, and once you make your art, it's out there. And whatever other people do with it, that's not on you. It's just having pride in what you do.
Yeah.
And then also, oops, I fell in love.
Yes.
So it's fucking fantastic.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the, you know, to your point, one of the quotes in the movie that I really like took to, that's kind of like a similar sentiment, is like the when he has that dream. So one thing I think that's really cool is the motif of dreamscapes and Jiro getting lost in his own thoughts, and in like a more like the imagery used for them getting lost in his thoughts, he can like visualize certain things happening to him in real time or whatever. And so like when he has these dreams with Caproni, I think is the inventor's name.
Yeah.
The Italian writer Caproni. Caproni says, would you rather live in a world with
I'm not laughing.
Kayla, are you okay? No, I literally saw the I dead ass. No, okay. All right, for audio listeners, I am in the middle of talking. I look at Kayla, and there's a tear, a lone tear, just.
As you guys keep talking about it, I'm just like, yeah.
Do you need to like
mute no, the camera? Because I'm gonna get through the pod.
Okay. Okay. Let me.
Okay, so Caproni and the Dreamscape.
Caproni, yes. Caproni and the Dreamscape. Okay, so Caproni says, would you rather live in a world with pyramids or not? Mm-hmm. Now, I don't necessarily know why, like, pyramids is the phrasing used here, but he continues and says, like, I created these planes because I know humans have wanted to fly forever. I've wanted to, like, be in the skies. I think planes are amazing. However, I know that what I do is going to be used for war, be tools to make money. These do this, all these, like, there's going to be malicious things that happen to people inventing things that on the surface or like in practice or in theory should be like beautiful art pieces that help people or like at least just like come have a vision come to life in a positive way. But there's always going to be situations where that specific thing is used negatively. And like, that can mean so many different things. Like the advent of the internet in general, I think the person that obviously like the people that created the internet are like, well, this is supposed to be something that connect everybody and internet, social media to like connect everybody and to be able to like search up things, to learn, to have more knowledge of, but then you can kind of see, you know, as the internet has expanded, like, it's always going to be the advent of malicious or nefarious or greedy actions associated with this thing that was supposed to be, like, on the surface, this vision thing was supposed to be, like, beautiful. So I think it's cool that he mentions that, like, your art, you know, regardless if you make it, like that shouldn't deter you from making art or being an inventor or having a vision of something or just being a creator of something in general, because like people are going to use it negatively regardless. So regardless of that, you should just keep creating stuff. So I thought that was cool. I will say, I guess coming back to me for my own initial thoughts, like, yes, I gave this a 5 out of 5 because it is my favorite Miyazaki movie of the ones we have seen right now. And I think it's cool. So one thing I did look up, and we can talk about this a little bit later, we could circle back to it, but Zoe mentioned that it's based on a real person. So Jiro Horikoshi was a real person back in the 1920s, 1930s and 40s that designed a lot of the planes for the Japanese military around the time that they were in World War I, World War II. Mm-hmm. And it's basically like, here's the thing. What the funny thing is, though, is the story, The Wind Rises, the movie, is a side manga project that Miyazaki started outside of Studio Ghibli that is based on a fictionalized biography of Jiro Horikoshi written by Tatsuo Hori called The Wind Has Risen. Yeah. So I think it's basically it's just like a roundabout way of just like getting back to that original short story. And Zoe, did you hear something? Okay, mm-hmm. I thought your eyes popped up for a second. I was like, uh-oh. Is it about Persona 4?
No. Oh. I'm nothing.
Yeah, okay. But yeah, like I think it's a cool way to like, you know, honor him and show like both the anti-war sentiment and like the idea of, you know, creating art and what it means for humans in general. Kayla, do you think you can make it through your initial thoughts? Because I see some tears.
They keep rolling. Just ignore them. Yes, I can get through. I'm super normal and cool about this movie. Okay, so it's, I said this in a text message to our group, but it makes me angry that this movie, either I wasn't getting the like notifications or things about it. Like I had never heard of it being so good. I had never heard of it being like his top movie. And that's a crime, I feel. It's really good for so many reasons. I typically, as you both know, and listeners, I lean more towards like fantasy because I like to escape reality because I'm not good with it. But this one does a really good job of mixing both. And the frog in my throat is choking me. It's just really powerful and really beautiful. And I remember when we first were trying to remember what movie we were going to watch this week, I had said like, oh, this one's based on a true story or based on a real guy. That's cool. Never give me a biography of any. Don't give me anything centered in reality to be so for real, because then all I do is like randomly throughout the movie, I'd be like, oh my gosh, how amazing. Oh my gosh, this person was real and they went through these things and they suffered and blah, blah, blah. So it was really good. And I can't keep talking because this is, I don't know if I can, for those of you who also don't know, I rate a lot of like my movies based off the amount of times I can see it. Because to me, like movies are typically supposed to be a comfort. I'm not comforted right now. Not feeling very comforted in this space. So it probably won't be a movie that I rewatch a lot for Miyazaki, but because it's so good, I had to give it a 5. And I'll probably watch this when I feel like I need to let my feelings out and can't tap into that. So I would like for you guys to give your facts now so I can start thinking about facts more than the movie.
Yes.
I was gonna say stuff before we started filming and I forgot. But I think the reason why this wasn't spoken about so much was so Ponyo, The Secret Life of Arrietty, movies that were made more for kids were distributed by Walt Disney.
Right.
Spirited Away, Princess Mononoke. And I'm talking about in America. This is in America.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They were distributed by Buena Vista Pictures, which widely known to be a subsidiary of Disney. Everyone knows, oh, Buena Vista, that's Disney, just not for kids.
Yeah.
Apparently, this was distributed by Touchstone Pictures. One, doesn't exist anymore. Two, another subsidiary of Disney that released mature movies.
Oh, okay.
They released shit like Armageddon. And that's why Armageddon is a Disney movie or something like that.
Yeah.
But I'm almost positive that's why it didn't get the recognition that it deserves. It's not like, I don't know. It's weird because this was his, oh, another thing. It was released in 2013, limitedly, I guess, is the word I'm looking for. So it can be nominated for the Oscars that year. And then in 2014 was given a wide release. Like the release was weird.
Yeah.
And I think that's why it gets lost in the ether, kind of.
Okay, that makes sense. That makes sense. It's like, because I know we mentioned about, is this a Disney property? Is this a whatever? And I was like, well, you know, on the production credits, like in the opening like scenes, it says Walt Disney Japan on the thing. And I was like, so I guess it did get distributed by Japan though. And then you were like, nah, it's, I guess like,
because I didn't know. As far
as distribution in Japan, it's by Walt Disney. Yeah.
Because I didn't even know that Touchstone was a Disney company.
And they helped produce Roger Rabbit, Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Correct.
Oh,
yeah. I'm looking to see if, I'm looking to see if they also did, because in my head I'm like, I feel like there are a few movies that I love that are just either distributed or
produced.
Helped. Yeah, produced. The Night Before Christmas also being one of them.
Is Disney just like Square Enix? Remember how you had that whole issue with Square Enix?
I mean, everyone knows Disney owns everything, but they've been owning everything since, like, for a while now, apparently.
Yeah, for sure.
But it's weird because The Boy and the Heron is Warner Brothers. It's not a Disney property, so I don't know what happened there.
Maybe they must have lost distribution rights, or like they lost. You know how rights to properties and IPs work all the time, like with studios. I mean, obviously with like anime studios getting certain shows and stuff, it's the same thing, probably. Yeah. But yeah, that's so cool. I think, you know, I guess we can go into a little, I guess, more factual stuff to kind of like reel back some stuff. I think as far as the historical background of the movie, mm-hmm. It's being set in the 1920s, 1930s, like World War One, World War Two, and I think that it's one thing I thought was cool how it opens up with the Kanto earthquake of 1923, and basically how that like devastated Japan in general, and like especially like the major cities like Tokyo and stuff like that. But one thing as far as like the background of Japan is after that earthquake, like their economy like suffered massively. And so the Great Depression also hit on top of that. So I think, and the reasoning for them kind of getting back on their feet, unfortunately, was a war. And so like they, you know, Miyazaki definitely got, looking through this like the history of this movie, like Miyazaki definitely got a lot of flack from pro-Japanese nationalists who felt as though this movie was like very like anti like Japanese pride. Like they basically were saying, trying to talk about how, you know, we're framing Japan in a bad light, and how like the issues that they had in terms of like getting back on their feet post the Great Depression. But then also too, on the flip side of it, they were a lot of the people that were, you know, a little more sensitive to, you know, the anti-war, the pacifist, you know, people, like they were kind of, you know, mad at him because it made it seem like he was downplaying a lot of the war crimes that Japan underwent as a result of like World War II or whatever. Honestly, if you think about it, right, you know, Jiro is, you know, framed as this, he's framed as like a innovator, like a genius, you know, composer, like who loved and all that stuff. But like, if you really want to break down the layers, like he was designing planes to go kill people. Like you know what I'm saying? And so I think, you know, it's interesting, like the story he decides to tell about Jiro, or the story that's based about Jiro, because yeah, like, you know, somebody that's just kind of like a product of, you know, the time period that he's in, right? Mm-hmm. Like he has this idea about making planes and his beautiful art, like his beautiful inventions and stuff like that. But the way in which they're used, you know, is more for nefarious deeds, and he doesn't necessarily have control over that. He's just kind of presented with a situation, has to make the best of it.
Yeah.
In order for him to make his art, he has to, I'm sorry, Andre, he needs funding, and the funding comes with the planes having bombs. Like that's why, like later in the movie when he's like, oh, it'd be the perfect plane if only we could remove the guns,
the weapons,
the weapons from it. And that's when you see like the, not his boss, but I guess his coworker who's also above him, he is like inspired by it. He's like, oh my God, he's so right. Like he's there. Like there's magic in what he's talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I wanted to ask you guys a question in the beginning when the earthquake does happen. Did it not sound to you guys like many, many voices exhaling out at the same time?
Like a living being, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I love when Miyazaki does that. He sickens me with how good he is. And just like the earth breathing, I was just like, ah, it's so good. And then the second thing, because you know, we can tell that Jiro, like everyone thinks he's a genius, but obviously he was very smart from being a child. Like he was translating books from Italian or German to Japanese very, very young. But I love in the beginning when we're in his dream and he's flying his plane, the warcraft that's above him, because he's never seen one and he doesn't know what bombs look like, he doesn't understand them, being organic or just kind of like figuring out, oh, what would this look like? Like, how is my brain interpreting these things? I was just throwing pillows at my TV. I'm just like, this is so good. Because it reminded me of, there's this art piece of the first drawing of a rhino from someone who had never seen a rhino. They were just like described like what a rhino looked like. And it's a person, a zoologist or whatever, had gone out and said like, oh my God, they're armored like this and this and this. And they're explaining it to an artist and they're like, hey, draw this for me. And the artist is like, I never seen anything like that. So here you go. And it looks like an armored tank. It doesn't look like an animal. Like, it looks like an animal because it has like eyes and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not an animal. It's a machine. It's a beast looking thing. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I thought that was just really cool. And now I can give you back the mic.
What I was going to say was, Miyazaki deciding to make, you know, this manga and then this movie about Jiro Horikoshi, kind of, to me, it made sense because he was very outspoken on not wanting to go to war. Like, actually, he thought the war was not redundant. There was another word that he used, but he didn't like that they were at war. And so that's a big thing where, like, Miyazaki's also anti-war, but this guy participated in it. And that's, yeah, and that's what, you know, the ending scene is, where it's like he regrets making the plane. And
yeah,
the Italian guy, I forgot his name,
Caproni
was like, you set out to do what you wanted to do, make a beautiful plane, and you know, you were kind of screwed with the situation you were given, but you did what you wanted to do. And that's what you should take pride in.
He did the same thing. Caproni, yeah, was doing the same thing. He needed money, yeah, in order to make the planes. And he kept saying in his dreams, like, oh, I would rather these planes carry people because I want people to experience flight. And he goes, ah, but the Aerials are made for carrying bombs instead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's very interesting too, because, you know, it's based in real life Earth at a real volatile time. But it's interesting to see, you know, this movie is filled with Japanese people, Italian people, and German people, the Axis, mm-hmm, powers, which,
yeah,
like at that time in history, everyone's like, oh, like, whoa, like Germans and Italians, like he mentions Hitler and it's all this thing, but it's interesting to see it from like, from the inside, without it being
like overly like you see the Nazi insignias, you see like the Gestapo people, like, yeah, obviously they mention the secret police,
yeah,
and you kind of see them, obviously, like they're the secret police, so like you're not supposed to know what they look like, but yeah, like it's not as you know most, okay, from an American perspective,
correct,
most World War II IPs or movies or shows are going to be very overt in, yeah, in their showing of like Nazi Germany or of showing of the Axis powers. And whether that's, you know, mostly just our perspective, like being like the Allied powers and just being like, these motherfuckers were evil, so we can't really even like show them in a good, mm-hmm, way. You know what I'm saying? Probably just that. And so it's like different. So like when you know, Jiro and the rest of those Japanese engineers are like in those German hangars, you don't see any like Nazi insignias. You don't see any. You just see like the regular German, mm-hmm, like soldier outfits and stuff like that. And even like Dr. Junkers is like a normal guy, you know?
Yeah. It, like I said, it's cool to see it like that instead of fucking, I don't know if you've ever heard of the movie Valkyrie with Tom Cruise.
Yes.
Where he's a Nazi general, but he decides to flip on Hitler, and now he's secretly trying to kill Hitler, and it's this whole thing where it's like over the top and bombastic. It's like a fun movie, but it gets annoying to the, like, this feels very real for someone. Yes. For someone as creative and as magical as Miyazaki is, this feels very real.
Yeah. One thing I think was cool in terms of just the, I want to circle back a little bit to the like biography portion of this and what it's based on. This is also like not like the full thing, but like part of it. A lot of what happens in Jiro's personal life is based on a different book, and another character that's also in this movie is from a different book. And so it's the book is called The Magic Mountain. And it's by, hold on one second. I wrote it down. It's by, I didn't write down their author name, but it came out in 1924. And basically, do you remember Mr. Castorp? That like weird, the German dude with the weird gray eyes?
Yeah. Werner Herzog. Yeah.
Yes. He's based, so like his name is Mr. Castorp. He's based on the character Hans Castorp from the book The Magic Mountain.
I figured.
And in the movie, and he mentions, like, when he's talking to Jiro about, you know, like, what's going on outside with, like, the Axis powers, and also talking about how Nahoko has tuberculosis. When he's talking about that, he mentions a magic mountain to go get healed. That magic mountain is a sanatorium. Because the main setting of the Magic Mountain book is a sanatorium in Switzerland. And basically how the story goes in that is Castorp, right before World War I, goes to visit a Swiss sanatorium because his cousin has tuberculosis. He ends up contracting tuberculosis and has to stay in that sanatorium for 7 years. He was only going to be there for 3 weeks, ends up staying for 7 years. And throughout the entire of the book, entirety of the book, he's talking with mentors and stuff like that. And one of them explains that, like, you can't just stay cooped up here and waste your life away being scared of the outside world. You have to go, like, experience life and, like, don't just be stuck here. And unfortunately, like, spoiler alert for the book, for those that end up wanting to read it, but spoiler alert, Hans has to become a pilot in World War I, and eventually that's honestly like a death sentence. So like he's already just like, he, by the time he leaves the sanatorium, he already knows he's dead because he's going to be a pilot in World War I. And so a lot of the stuff that has to do with, like, you know, tuberculosis and like the sanatoriums and like how they're all in that big mountain range, that's from that book, The Magic Mountain. And so circling back to Miyazaki, Jiro's wife in real life never had tuberculosis.
I figured.
Funny enough though, Miyazaki, well, not funny, but like just interesting enough, Miyazaki's mother did, and his father was a, was it, what I write down? He supplied rudders for the Mitsubishi A6M0, which was designed by Jiro Horikoshi. So like that part in it where, you know, Nahoko has tuberculosis, has to go to this big mountain range sanatorium, all that stuff, come, and even him meeting Mr. Castorp is basically like taking both of those short story, like the fictional biography and that book, and like putting them together. So I thought that was like a cool like addition.
Yeah,
for sure.
There always has to be, you know, Miyazaki's always gonna relate it to real life and to his life. He makes a lot of personal movies, especially later on in his career. But he gets inspiration in the most interesting places. From the jump, when you meet Castorp in the movie, he's like kind of weird.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, I was like, there's no real German guy that's only eating watercress and like telling Jiro all this shit. Like, oh, not only is Junkers, not only does he hate Hitler, your wife's going to die. Like, stuff like that.
Yeah.
That part of the movie especially felt. And he also says a line. He says something like, oh, you found like a summer love, but once you leave the mountain, you'll forget about it. Like,
yeah,
that made it seem very otherworldly. Like this yes. mountain that he's on vacation is this little bubble of its like own little world or something.
Like a Madame Zeroni situation where he's like very mystical.
Yeah.
I don't know why that's the first thought that came in my head. But he's just very he's just that mystical like person that kind of shows up and helps the main character and then just kind of like whisks away. And I thought that was interesting too, how like we talk about the secret police, like Castorp, funny enough, Castorp is based on an actual real life person. His name was Richard Sorge, who was a Soviet spy during World War I, World War II, who like lived in Germany as a Soviet spy. That's who Hans Castorp is based off of. And funny enough, when after he has that conversation, Jiro has a conversation with Castorp, the secret police are looking for him.
Yep.
So they probably think he's a spy. So I think that was like a cool, a cool world building addition to like the overall.
I don't know if it was overtly stated, but I'm pretty sure Castorp got arrested.
I think that's the vibe they were.
Yeah,
giving.
I feel like that's the sentiment. Yeah. Because I mean, obviously, he knows all this information about like the Germans and what's going on, and like you know, even Mr. What's his? Is it Kurokawa? Is his name?
Oh, his boss.
Yeah, Mr. Kurokawa, his boss, like Jiro's boss. It's like, oh, they already rounded up some of my friends.
Yep.
You know, and so I think it's kind of implied that, you know, Castor probably got captured. Yeah.
The Nazis are a bunch of hooligans. I would like to see the baby.
Oh my God.
That's him.
I see. Yeah. Okay. Kayla, I know you're going to start crying, but I feel like we need to talk about the romance in this movie.
No.
We have to.
So what's so funny is that I've always seen like top best romances in Studio Ghibli, like put together, or I want someone who hugs me like this, like that sort of like little romance-y compilations.
Yeah.
And I had seen that full scene where he like kicks off his shoes, where Jiro kicks off his shoes and runs to his wife fiance at the time when he did that. And I'm like, oh my God, that's so beautiful. I didn't know she was sick. I thought she was tired. I had never had the backstory.
Yeah.
And the time where like he holds her hand at night and is like, oh, if I could win like a slider contest with one hand, like I'd be the winner, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, yeah, but I give you good luck. And it's just so soft and so tender and so sweet. And then knowing now more that it's because she's been dying is so upsetting.
Fight it.
I'm fighting it.
Push them back. Push them back.
I just get real squeaky when I cry, so I'm trying to like push it back so it's making me sound like lower and more somber. I think that like her saying in the beginning, oh, I want to wait till I'm better to be with you, and obviously she doesn't get better because that's very rare, if at all possible, with tuberculosis,
in that time period, for sure.
Especially in that time period. Once he like gets back home and sees her, she's like, I'm wasting my time. I'm going to I'm going to do this. I'm going to go to sanatorium and get better. And then she has a second realization where she's like, I'm still running out of time, no matter what's going on. So I'm going to go be with my man. And the little wedding they have at the house is so beautiful and like so precious. And I love that his boss, coworker, whatever, was like really emotional about it. And he's like, oh, he can give you nothing, but yeah, I approve this marriage. And that was just really beautiful and sweet. And that they got to like live there, obviously, with him just working. I don't know if he was paying them or I don't know. It kind of felt like implied that he's like, I just want to keep you safe because you're a genius, so you could live here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm jumping back and forth. when he kisses her and then she's like, you'll catch it. And then he just goes, you're beautiful.
Okay, let me time out. Okay, okay, that was crazy. But let me time out. I literally, I had to, I'm sorry.
You picked this movie on this day. And you keep bringing up things that made me cry.
You decided to watch it the day of. That's not my bad.
Yeah, you decided to go to Disney.
Well.
We love you, Kayla.
Whatever. Love you too.
I was on my train of thought. What was I about to say?
Time out with the.
Yes. Okay. The education system has ruined me because as soon as he kisses her, I look up. Is tuberculosis contagious? I was like, dude, you're gonna die. Like, I'm like. And then he kisses her multiple times, is in her airspace a lot, and nothing happens. So I'm like, okay, I guess the kind of TB she has isn't like an airborne, because I guess there's multiple versions of TB. Yeah. I guess her version isn't like airborne where you can like spread it to people. But I was like, yo, I was like, time out, dude. I was like, you're going to die now. Like, you're before you even get a chance to like build your dream plane. I thought that's where it was going to go. My thought process at first was like, oh, he's going to kiss her. That's going to come up later where he now has tuberculosis. She gets cured and now he dies. That's what I thought was going to happen.
No.
I thought it was so beautiful. I was like, he's going to die.
No, then, there was like a part of me that thought it was kind of like the situation where like during the AIDS epidemic where like doctors like, I'm not going to touch this person with AIDS because then I'm going to get AIDS. And it's like, no, you have to like share blood or whatever to be able to get it. So a lot of gay men who were getting AIDS, like lesbians, went and took care of them. So I thought it was just kind of like that's all that ran through my mind. I'm like, he can't get sick because he's taking care of her and love finds a way. And there's probably something that takes care of that. So he kiss her all he want because she needs little kisses because she's so precious. And I didn't look anything up. I was locked in. I didn't pause. My mom called me. I didn't even pick up. I was like, I can't talk. I'm locked into this.
Crazy.
What really got me was, you know, Kayla was talking about, she has a realization of, oh, I got to go to the sanatorium to get better. Then she has another realization of, I'm still.
I was going to get there.
Going to die, so I might as well spend it with him. Her third realization of
I'm gonna die.
I want him to remember me as I was, not how I am going to be.
Yeah.
So she goes back without telling anyone. Because I've experienced that in real life.
As have I.
So it's something where like as soon as I figured out what she was doing, it really hit me. I was like, fuck.
I didn't figure it out till the sister saw her on the, like, away. First of all, as soon as she left the house, I kept looking. I'm like, is she going to collapse? Is she going to collapse? Like, is this it?
I did too, yeah.
So I kept, like, staring at her, and I didn't think that her room was, like, all cleaned up and, like, that she had done that because she was still very weak. So the fact that she did, like, clear out everything was, like, a big deal. Mm-hmm. But, like, she's, like, so powerful and strong, and she had been through so much. And, the fact that exactly what Andre said, her third realization is, like, basically I love this man so much, and he has so many big dreams, and I just want him to live, and I don't want him suffering, because obviously he suffers seeing me suffer. Or like the fact that when the sister yelled at him and she's like, do you know that she puts blush on so that you don't know that she's sick, or as sick as she is? That's so, like, that's, women are so strong and cool. And that's just crazy. Like, just being, like, so supportive. The fact that you're just both smiling at me because you're, like, laughing. No, because we're... so annoying.
Not even, no, it's not even, a laugh of, like, we're laughing at you. It's just, like, you know.
It's like a, huh.
If we don't smile, this podcast is going to have a really different vibe.
No, for real.
And already, I literally, like, as soon as I was, like, setting up my camera, I'm like, I'm going to be such a downer this whole time. And, like, I know that. I could have canceled, but I didn't want to. Because I was like, I'm already crying, might as well. But I also want to give a quick shout out to the sister. The sister's so cool.
Yeah, she's awesome.
Kayo.
Kayo was great.
Voiced by Katara. Mae Whitman.
Love that. I knew I heard that reprimanding voice somewhere. when she's like, again, in that blush scene, but she's like, you need to be home taking care of her, or she needs to go to the doctors because she's my sister now and I really like her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
So good.
But also, if this makes you feel better, you could think of Kayo eating a Mae and egg, because that's also Mae Whitman. From Arrested Development.
That is Mae Whitman, yes, it is.
So we're basically the same person, is what you're saying.
She calls it a Mae and egg. outside of that, I texted in the chat to Kayla. I said that this, a lot of the lines and the actions that that Jiro and Nahoko do with each other makes me feel unbelievably single. Like, it's not even, like, I literally in my head, I paused it on when he holds her hand and she says I love watching you work, then she goes, you work better when you're holding my hand, and then followed up with you're going, I'm never letting you go. I paused it and I go, will I ever love somebody like this?
Every time I see a good romance anime, I'm like, I don't think I've ever loved anyone like this, and I don't know if I ever will. But damn, if that ain't beautiful. Like, that's like, so good.
I was like, that's crazy. And then, I almost threw my phone across the room in that scene, because I've seen this scene before on Twitter. Where Jiro falls asleep on the little futon thing outside of it. And Naoko, like, moves the sheet over.
Yeah.
So he gets covered in it. And then she, like, turns and comes up to him. I was like, all right, man. I was like, I'm done. I said, I quit. I said, this is insane.
Yeah.
I just really enjoyed their relationship together. Like, I think they had really good chemistry the whole time, and I think it was a very sweet relationship. Obviously, like, it's rooted in very tragic circumstances, but I feel like even if it wasn't, I feel like they'd still act that way. That's how it came across to me. It was so good. I quote, I won't let you go, in all caps, man, fuck.
It also, I don't know if you guys, like, know, like, the actual statistics or whatever, but the rate of men staying with women that are sick
is low.
Is really low.
A lot smaller, yeah.
And women staying with men that are sick,
really high.
Really high.
Yeah.
And Miyazaki always just builds such sweet characters, and I don't know if it's because he loves women. I don't know if he does, or he's just like, or he just loves human beings, but he always picks the best human beings. He writes them beautifully in his movies, and he's just so selfless. And it wasn't just when it was with his wife; you could tell that was his personality. Even when he was a kid, when he saved the little boy getting, you know, kind of rustled up by the big guys, and in English, the line that he says is like he says the other kid's name and he goes, he's half your size. Like,
yeah,
he always cares about the little guy. And that like kind of carried on throughout his life. Like he was, yeah, at least, in, sure, you know, the life in his, in the movie. Yeah, just a really cool character. And I see artistic autism loud and clear when he was just like obsessed with like certain shapes and, yeah, things.
Yeah.
It's so prevalent. Like it's so like, okay. I always think about my art teacher whom I love with all my heart, Yomari Silva. She was the person who got me into sculpting. And I always tell her that I love her, especially when I watch a movie about an artist and like artist teacher, like the movie Soul. Like I will always text her and be like, thank you for giving me art. Anyway, that was a small sidetrack. She's obsessed with like pitcher plants and a lot of other different plants. And you see that always in her artwork, like hiding somewhere or there's an attribute of this plant or something going on. So the fact that like from the jump, when he saw the fish bone, that mackerel bone, which he had, would always eat, it was something he was used to all the time. But him having that realization of like, look how cool this is and I can replicate it and put it into my work. Mm-hmm. That's an artist if I ever saw one. And then when the Italian man, I always want to say like cannoli, but it's not.
Caproni, I think.
Caproni. When he talks about an artist only has like 10 years to like, yeah, be an artist, I remember being like, huh? Like in the movie. And then I was like, it's not that an artist can only create for 10 years. It's when you're an artist and you really like something, you just take that same thing and redo it until it's dead. Mm-hmm. Like until you can't do anything with it anymore. And right, maybe that's 10 years. I don't know. But I get that because all of my artwork always ends up being about the same thing. The same way that Miyazaki always ends up making movies that are interconnected and similar in their theming or their style or the message he's trying to get across.
Yes.
So Jiro is perfect. And everybody in that movie is perfect. Except obviously the people who are supporting the war in the movie.
Yes.
But they are also just what's the product of their circumstances, because
yes,
at the end of the day, they had to do what they had to do. Not saying that it's right. I'm not supporting it. But yeah, that's a big theme of the movie. It's like, I have no control. Where else am I going to make money to provide for my family? And we're getting back to what I wanted to talk about, which is the shortcake scene. When him and his friend are sitting down eating shortcake, they
him
have...
Hanjo.
Hanjo. Jiro and Hanjo have this conversation of like, again, Jiro's repeating the same food, but they talk about how can this country be so poor when we're all working so hard? And then Hanjo's like, it's because all we keep doing is giving money to the military. And all that money that we're giving to the military could be restoring our people and like not being poor. But he's like, by the end of the day, that's why I'm an engineer, because I need money to do the things that I need to do and build. Because he was also a creative, mm-hmm, person. And he recognizes it. Like he recognizes, yeah, the flaw in the system of like how money moves along. And that's when I first texted you guys, for the listeners, that I started crying. There was nothing sad in that scene inherently, but the thought of war and military always being the forefront of most world leaders' minds. And that's why the countries suffer.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. I think I'll kind of jump off from that point. I think Hanjo, in my head, I can't think of the right word. He's not a foil to Jiro, but he like mirrors, he's a parallel narrative for Jiro in that he's just a lot more like expressive about what's going on in front of him.
Yeah.
Like Jiro, you know, he'll casually mention like, oh, you know, I'd like to build these planes without any weapons, or I just like building planes. I like planes are beautiful dreams, that kind of stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hanjo's like, hey, brother, we in this fucked up situation. I'm going to make planes and get paid for it. Yeah, I don't like what I'm doing. but I gotta make a living. When he gets dressed to leave, that's what I really liked Hanzo as a character. When he gets dressed to leave and he goes in that scene and he goes, I'm gonna go get married. he's like, wait, what do you mean you're gonna get married? He says something to the effect of like, he was like, I need some motivation to work hard.
Yeah.
So like when I come home, I have something to look for. When I have something to look forward to when I come home. Like,
yeah.
I want a family. That way I can like work really hard at my job, even though I don't like what I'm doing for this country. But like, I know that in my head, when I come back home, I'm going to be surrounded by a wife and my kids and stuff like that. I thought that was really cool.
It's also that you can't really have a, he was trying to do the whole thing where like a house is not a home. So he can live mm-hmm. in a house and go back. But like, look at all of them where they always came back to like cigarette butts everywhere and like really papers messy and stuff, engineering yeah. areas. But the idea, you know, behind that is if I have a partner at home who's staying home and taking care of the home, that home becomes a house, or the house becomes a home, you know, however yeah. the phrasing
yeah.
is.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's like, I'm getting married because I want to still feel joy when I get back. Because going back to that, to a house that's devoid of life, is not really living, and their lives are not guaranteed.
Yeah. A lot of them in take these home places. With, like, take work with them home. Mm-hmm. A lot of them just yes. took work with them home. So it's like, yeah. you know, it was a tough situation for them. Like they'd want, Hanzo wanted something to look forward to come back mm-hmm. home to. Mm-hmm. Let's change gears. Cause I know because it's,
I have a headache.
I want to talk about the just animation aesthetic and soundtrack of this
boy
movie. Because man, oh man, it was phenomenal. I think there's like two shots in the movie that I paused and I go, this must have taken years to make, because when the earthquake happens and the fire is burning and all the, and there's that big like top down like eagle eye shot of all the people moving through the city.
Yep.
Uh-huh. Of like people all moving at the same time.
Gorgeous.
I was like, that scene in general was animated so like fluid, but I'm like, that must have been the most painful like time period in the movie process, because like having to animate each individual person, have them do something, have them move a certain way must have taken forever.
There's a famous interaction, I don't know if it's with this movie, where an animator is telling Miyazaki, like, what's the point? This is going to take too long, and the scene is only 4 seconds. And Miyazaki says, I don't care. We're animating all of this.
I think it is this movie.
I don't know why that makes sense to me. that they yeah. did it probably for the scene of the people moving through the city. After the earthquake, because like yeah. if for those who haven't seen this movie, it is so impressive. If you not only like animation but appreciate the artistry that goes behind making a movie and making an animated movie, fucking gorgeous yeah. the way that specific sequence is animated.
Yeah
for sure.
You, Taylor, we don't really, yes. When I'm super, it takes me a long time to get locked into something because I am just, I'm a wiggler. I'm a squirmer. I gotta move when I watch something. And some people will tell me like, Kaylee, you need to like sit still during a movie to appreciate it. And that is true, which is why sometimes I have to like sit and lock in. This took no effort for me to wow. lock in. Like, I don't even think I shifted in my seat during the movie. I got up once, and typically when I get up to like go to the bathroom or get something to drink, I keep the movie going because I can hear it from the bathroom or the kitchen or whatever. And I had to pause it because I was like, I don't want to miss something that could potentially happen, because what if I miss something?
Right.
It is gorgeous.
Yeah, it's so pretty. It's like the landscapes are awesome. Like the designs of the ships in general. Every dreamscape sequence for either Jiro or just like, you know, that scene where the plane's like flying overhead and all of his production workers can like can see the plane when like Hanjo and Jiro are sitting in the airplane hangar, and like they can feel the wind mm-hmm. like hit them as they're like on top of the plane. Like it's just animated so beautifully, and like every shot it's just like super gorgeous. And then one thing I wanted to mention was like how cool the soundtrack was, because again, you know, there's always like that one titular specific song that plays, and then obviously they change it up in certain ways. Like whenever he's in the dreamscape, kind of in some scene, not exactly every single time, but like most of the time, that song has that like Italian-ish guitar string in it.
Is it the what is that instrument called? The mandolin.
Yeah, it has that little mandolin like twang in a lot of the notes. Yeah. And then obviously there's like a piano version that plays. And it was funny, it reminded me a lot of like Howl's Moving Castle. Like those two soundtracks sounded not in a bad way, but they sounded similar
because of like, the European like
influence.
Correct. Yeah. And every time we bring up the soundtrack, I'm always going to say it because I get it. Hans Zimmer. I get it. There's so many more different sounds in the world. I get it. Hans Zimmer makes these great grand fucking an orchestra of 9 William people. Like, but Joe Hisaishi is such a master at his craft. It doesn't matter what genre you throw at him, he's gonna pick the best fucking sound. This is the same guy who did the whole synth wave sound of Nausicaa. It's completely different. They sound nothing alike, but it's the same fucking guy. What is this, 40 years after the Nausicaa? It's insane. It's crazy.
Yeah. It's like, and then with Howl and Wind Rises, it's like, it's funny because they have the same aesthetic in the soundtrack, where obviously he has like in European influence, but you know, obviously Kayla wasn't on the episode we did Howl, but like we mentioned about it. Sorry.
It's okay.
Me and Zoe talked about how a lot of like the way in which the song flows makes it seem like it's you're at a circus.
Yeah, it's like a waltz. Like, da,
da, da, da, it is a waltz. Da, yes.
Da, 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 da. Like it's like a very like a waltzy. Like you're at like a carnival.
Or we a circus. Know that movie is clown coded, which is why
it's very That I think we said it on the episode. It's very circus.
Yeah. Yes. Circus esque. And then this one has a similar tone, but I think this is more like a sweet dream.
Yeah.
Then like a circus feel.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Which makes sense because of this shared kingdom of dreams that he has with Capobliotto. What the fuck's his name?
Caproni. I feel like
you're the only one.
And watch me look this up and be wrong about his pronunciation of his name.
It's actually crazy because Taylor is usually the worst with names.
My brain isn't working. At least you didn't call him cannoli. I feel like I'm going to hell for that. He has a great mustache, though.
Do you know who voiced him?
No.
Who?
The Tucci.
Stanley Tucci?
Stanley Tucci.
Yes. Yeah, he does.
Listen. I always got
to bring it up. This voice acting cast is crazy.
I always got to bring it up. Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yep.
Yeah.
Emily Blunt.
Yeah.
Yep. John Krasinski. William H. Macy, for those who don't know that name, the dad from Shameless. Stanley Tucci, Mae Whitman. There's the cast.
The voice actor for Steven Universe. The guy that voices Steven is Kid Jiro.
Yes, I knew
no
he sounded
I
familiar.
Love him.
I heard it immediately. I was like, oh, that's Steven.
Kurokawa is Martin Short.
Yes. Yeah. And, yes, I knew that was Martin Short. I love him so much.
And then Castorp, like I said, Werner Herzog. Elijah Woods in this for a second.
Mm-hmm. Only for like 2 seconds.
Yeah, Sone. Very small.
Oh, yeah, it's a very small. Hold on.
And very interestingly enough, Jiro in the Japanese version, in the original version, is voiced by Hideaki Anno.
Oh, that's cool.
The creator of
Evangelion.
Ooh.
And director of Shin Godzilla.
Troubled indeed.
Actually,
that's cool though.
We did a whole episode about Eva. When he first did Eva, he was very sad. But then he redid Eva, and there's a happy ending. And he he did that after he got a wife and got happy again.
Yeah, huge call. That's our most downloaded episode ever.
Which one?
Half the Evangelion messed us up. Have you remember that episode?
No, so I haven't heard it. I stopped listening to the archives of this.
Some of the archives, I listened back to some of our episodes and I hate how they're produced because they just like the audio sucks to me. Mm. But like, you know, we were still kind of learning and figuring things out at the time. And so, but obviously it's gotten a lot better. But I will say like that's one of my favorite episodes we've done because what the timeline was insane because we literally watched in the span of 3 days, Kayla, we watched the entirety of Evangelion.
That's crazy.
The end of Evangelion and then all four rebuild movies.
Yeah.
In 3 days.
I was unemployed.
I had a lot of free time because I think it was like a slow time period at Palm Beach Atlantic where we didn't really have much sports going on at the same time. So I had a lot more time to like just do stuff. And that doing it in 3 days was so traumatizing. Oh my God. I was like, I would never. I love Evangelion. It's one of my favorite anime of all time.
It's amazing.
However, I have to be in a specific mood, or like, I can't just throw it on and watch.
Yeah,
I can't just do that.
I get that. That's how I approach every movie, any media, any visual media. It's fine. We're back.
So I do think I have the poster of Ava behind me.
Yeah.
I feel like we should do a reprise. Not watch all of them in the span of 3 days. I don't think we need to do that again. That's insane.
Kayla, have you ever seen
it?
I've only ever seen like bits and pieces.
Okay, we need to watch force it. Kayla to watch just the sad one.
What do you mean? Unkind.
We make her watch the original version, make her talk about it, and then we show her the happy version.
What we'll do, Kayla. Oh, damn. What we do, Kayla, is we'll watch. I hit my mic. I know. That was super loud. We'll watch like the original Eva and mm-hmm. End of Evangelion, just like all 26 episodes in the movie, and then we'll talk about it. And then we'll watch the four rebuild movies, which are actually pretty good. Mm-hmm. And then we'll talk about those.
Except for the
it'll be a two-parter.
The second one sucks.
But
Goddamn, the second one pissed me off.
The second one sucks not because it's a bad movie, but because Shinji's literally the most insufferable character, even worse than how insufferable he is in the original show.
Yeah.
But again, we're getting off topic.
We have veered.
I mean, you mentioned Hideki Anno. I was just like, well, you know, it's just one of those things. But to kind of circle back, I think, you know, the overall theme is cool about The Wind Rises. And I think that it's the opening line that you see from like the Paul Velray guy, I think his name is, the poem where it says like, the wind is rising, we must try to live.
Mm-hmm.
It's Paul Valery. I know it's like he's French. So I know that E is doing something different in that pronunciation. Mm. Basically, like it's a French poem that explains through the face that through the face of adversity, which is personified by the wind, mm-hmm. that we as humans need to continue to live and try to find the best of bad situations. And so what's cool is one of my favorite mangas of all time. It's called Bartender. And there was an anime that came out about it recently. It's pretty solid, nothing too crazy. But it's basically just about like this one like Japanese bartender who like people every episode like people will come to his bar and they have their life stories and he makes them a drink based on like to kind of offer them some advice or some reprieve or some kind of like comfort essentially. And in one of the episodes, this one guy who's like, I think he's either traveling from France or like he's been to France a few times. And he basically mentions the French, I don't know if like the French national like creed or some kind of French phrasing, which is basically like, I wrote it down. Where's it at? It was basically like a similar, phrasing where basically it was like, it says, he who rises with the waves will not be swallowed by it. So I thought, and I thought that was super cool how like, that's just like the, and I think that phrase came out roughly around the similar time that, this poem came out. So I thought that was like a cool like addition that I can kind of like put piece those two together. I think it's a cool, message for, the movie in general. Y'all got, we're at hour five, hour six. I think that might be.
I just looked at Kayla. She looked very sad.
I know.
I'm gonna have to like watch something happy. I've literally, I am going to need to recuperate. This is why all my friends make fun of me, but they're like, oh my God, watch this movie. It's so sad. And then you'll be fine. I'm not fine.
No.
I don't bounce back like that. Okay. I'm weak. And then the feelings sit with me 2 to 3 days. And then I bounce back.
But you've,
I need a palate cleanser for sure.
You've experienced beautiful art.
Yes. And no. And I'm not taking away from that. I just need to be prepared for the art. And you know what? I'm glad that I didn't know what this movie was going to do to me emotionally, because I would have been like, oh guys, I couldn't do it. Watch it without me. I can't watch it. If I had known, I would have actively tried to avoid it.
Avoided it? That's crazy.
100%. You know how many times I avoid sad movies? Any chance I get. Just because I only have this much left to give. And then if a movie takes it away, how can I give it to my friends?
Oh my gosh. I get you.
But no, it was very good. One last thing I want to ask you guys, because people are debating online which this part means, but when Jiro tests the plane and he gets distracted because the wind blows and he looks off, do you think that's the moment that he realizes that his wife is gone, as in she left to go to the sanatorium? Or do you think that's the moment that she dies and she is off with the wind? Because in that moment, we can tell she's gone. I just don't know which gone it is.
Well, that's to him.
That's to her. Him. That's. He's doing the test at the same time that she's leaving. I don't think she died on the way to the sanatorium. I just think he felt a change. He felt
okay.
Like,
yeah.
I think it's, again.
Okay, but some people feel. So there's always like this thing medically where you are very together and with it and happy and active right before you die. Mm-hmm. Like you get like a burst of like last minute energy and then you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is what leads me to believe that like she may have been on the train or whatever. She was on the train. She might have died before she got to the sanatorium, or when she gets there. I don't know.
Makes it so complicated, and I don't like that. I'd rather it be that he felt a change.
Okay.
Yeah. Then I'll say for me, knee-jerk reaction was when he turns and looks, I think he like felt that something might have happened to her, or like she left. Knee-jerk reaction,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, I can see where people could feel like he felt her dying, because he never sees her again after that scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like it could be implied that he just felt like a shift where she could have like, you know, passed on, and he only saw her in his dreamscape. Yep. Where she tells him he has to keep living. That's what got me, Kayla. That's what got me.
I was already there.
Where she starts saying you have to live, I was like, ooh. I was fucking losing my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the thing of her, because again, this movie is based in reality, quotation yeah. marks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Her dying on the train, he never sees her again because he remembers how she used to look, of course.
Yeah.
So her dying on the train would mean that, like, oh, we got to get this fucking dead body out of here. What the fuck? Oh, and God. We can't send her to her family and she's not at the hospital. What the fuck do we do with that? And I don't like that.
Okay. I didn't think about it that way. I'm just sharing what the people think.
I agree more with Taylor where he felt a change. He felt that she left. My knee-jerk reaction immediately was, oh, she's passing by on the train.
My knee-jerk reaction was, she's gone, but my brain didn't decipher what in what way. Living or dead, she was gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd rather it that she died at the sanatorium.
Yeah, in my head.
In a nice, comfortable bed where people can take care of her afterwards peacefully.
You're right.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I wanted to share.
That's good. Yeah. So, wow. This was an emotional episode. I think I'll say, you know, not the first time. I think what's funny is I've cried more times watching Miyazaki movies than I have for most other media. I'm not going to lie to you. I think the last thing that's not Miyazaki related to make me cry watching was Mob Psycho season 3, the last episode. That was the only.
And see, I'm actively avoiding that one. I keep going, I'm going to watch it.
Dog.
But the thing is, it's not.
I'm coming in, what, a month?
Yeah.
Less than a month? I'm going to be down there less than a month. We're going to have to watch it, dude.
Kayla, but it's not sad, Kayla. Honestly,
I think it's not sad.
It's not.
It isn't.
It's nothing like this. This, I understand where it's like, yes, you experienced it and you like the movie. You're never going to watch this again.
I will, because I want to see it in Japanese next.
But Mob Psycho, I think it's something where you're going to be like, oh my God, that's so beautiful. And I love everybody.
Okay.
That's what I. Yeah.
But also, too, the reason why it hit me so hard is because in season 3, like, you know, the first two seasons, like, I love Mob as a character. Mm-hmm. Season 3. I literally am actively watching the show going, that's me on screen. I was like, oh. And then that last episode, what happens? And then whatever happens at the end, I was like, yeah, I've been there before. And I was like, yeah, it kind of broke me. I'm not going to lie. I loved it though. But I was like, yeah.
It's so, so.
For sure.
So.
I'm tearing up right now thinking about the last scene. I'm not going to lie to you.
It's very, it's very touching. The ending is very touching. Yes. It's nothing sad. It's nothing overtly sad. It's touching. Yeah.
Okay. But you will cry. I'm not. But yeah. You will cry.
I cried. For sure. I cried.
This is the most I've cried in the podcast. I've teared up before and I've choked up, but to have rolling tears for the majority.
Dog, I was in the middle. I was in the middle of a sentence and I just see the one. Whoop, I was like, oh shit.
And that was because that side's in the light. Like I kept getting them in here and I kept being I saw. I saw those. Stop. Yeah. I'm so exhausted.
You just have to yell. Have you seen that girl on TikTok?
No.
Where she goes, whenever I get sad.
Oh,
like this,
dances?
For example.
Yeah.
And then it cuts.
Yeah. Yeah. She's crazy, and I love her for that.
You just gotta yell.
Yeah. I don't think we need to do music recommendations because I think we need to just cut it off.
Listen
here.
To this soundtrack.
Yes, actually.
Yeah.
Go listen to the soundtrack for sure. Y'all got anything else before we sign off?
I can say a happy thing.
Sure.
Go ahead.
You guys both know it, but I'm going to go see T-Pain in October, and I'm so excited. It's the most excited I've been for a concert in so long. Oh my God, I can't wait. And that brings me joy.
October.
And that will get me.
When?
15th.
Jesus Christ, Kayla.
Yeah.
We're leaving to Orlando the 16th.
Oh my
You're
God.
Correct.
Where's
You're gonna be a fucking correct.
Where's the concert?
Hollywood.
In Hollywood?
Yeah.
Kayla, stay in Hollywood, drive up from Hollywood. What? No, you have a fucking train ticket. And this is why you don't.
Oh, yeah, the bright line ticket?
This is why. I haven't bought the ticket yet.
Oh, I thought you already did.
No.
Don't get it. Just drive up from Hollywood. There's no point in coming back.
We'll see how crazy I feel.
You're gonna be a fucking zombie.
Wait
dude.
A second.
Oh my God.
Emily and I are driving. We could pick you up.
Oh, facts.
Save your money.
Oh. This is an after podcast.
Yeah, let's end it.
But yeah, Kat's gonna be with me, so I'm very excited. Okay. Anyway, this movie is to try to hurt you and make you cry for several hours. War is horrible. Free Palestine. You guys have a wonderful day.
I've been Taylor, aka Nostalgia. I'm still myself. Collects everything. See you guys next time. Peace.
Bye.